All right, well, good morning again, and this is week four of social justice, and we just have this week and two more to go, and then there'll be the second half of the summer elective starting on the second Sunday of July. Well, I know that some of you are sports fans and like to watch a lot of sports on television. I have, for whatever reason, I didn't really grow up with it in my family, and so I've never made a lot of time to watch sports. I usually catch part of the Super Bowl and a couple Penn State football games a year, and that's about it. But I sometimes sit and think about, well, if I had all the time in the world and I could just watch sports, and what would I watch, or what in what order would be my priorities? Well, I don't want to offend some of you by saying this, but for whatever reason, and I know some of you are watching the World Cup now, but soccer on television just doesn't excite me. So. Now, give me liberty on this, because I know that some of you think it's the greatest thing, but I just can't get excited about it. I mean, for whatever reason, I think it's down there with professional bowling, you know. I just, he's coming up to the line, ready to deliver the ball. Will it be? You know, it's just, yes, David, I did watch professional bowling because my grandmother used to have it on every Saturday afternoon on ABC Wide World of Sports. So, yes. But as an adult, I have never watched professional bowling. So, there you go. Well, anyhow, so I know some of you are watching the World Cup, so I thought this was interesting. Here's a lineup of some of our U.S. women's soccer players, and no surprise, most media reports will tell you that the majority of our players on this women's soccer team are lesbian. The most open and proud about it is this player, Megan Rapinoe, I guess. Some of you may know how to say her name. Rapinoe, okay. Megan Rapinoe, who is the most vocal about her lesbianism. So I thought it was interesting, some of the statements she has made. She's publicly said that she'll no longer participate in patriotic displays as a protest to the Trump administration. Rapinoe added that because she's as talented as I am, she can use her platform, and I have to bleep out some profanities here, to those that she opposes. I'll probably never put my hand over my heart. I'll probably never sing the national anthem again, Rapinoe said, added that she views herself as a walking protest when it comes to the Trump administration because of everything I stand for. Have I convinced you yet not to watch any more women's soccer? He's saying. I feel like it's kind of in defiance in and of itself to just be who I am and wear the jersey and represent it, Rapinoe said. Because I'm as talented as I am, I get to be here. You don't get to tell me if I can be here or not, so it's kind of more profanity. To any sort of inequality or bad sentiments that the Trump administration might have towards people who don't look exactly like him. Which, God help us if we all looked like him, scary, really scary, disturbing. So press reports say this is not the first time Rapinoe has protested. She was fond of taking a knee during the national anthem as soon as Colin Kaepernick began his protests in the NFL by doing the same thing. The U.S. Soccer Federation changed its rules in 2017 to require players to stand for the national anthem, a rule that Rapinoe originally agreed to observe but called cowardly. I know what it means to look at the flag and not have it protect all of your liberties, she said. It would take a lot for her to end her protest, Rapinoe said. It would take criminal justice reform. It would take a huge inequality gap that we have to be much better. it would take a lot of progress in LGBTQ rights. We have such disparity in this country in so many different ways, inequality in so many different ways. Okay. So how do you process that? Is that social justice? Reed, you're smiling. Is it social justice? Oh, Barb's saying something to you. Oh, okay. What Barb said wasn't fit to be printed, so okay.
I said it's garbity gook.
Garbity gook, yeah. It sounds like gobbledygook, yes. Yes, Karen. Okay, now there's an interesting perspective on it that I hadn't thought about. Karen says she sounds like the man she hates. Okay. All right, well, there obviously is a tremendous amount of self-centeredness and arrogance with a veneer of social justice smeared over the top of it, right? Okay. But it does, yes. Mm-hmm. Right, so the comment was that she sounds like a child because parents are supposed to help children overcome this kind of self-centeredness. But there is this issue with social justice of the idea of rights. And in today's... In today's social justice, rights mean an unqualified acceptance of sin. At least that's how we would view it as believers. Okay? And this is different from the rights that were campaigned for or demanded under the social gospel. So the last couple of weeks we were talking about the fact that the social gospel that occurred 150 years ago has morphed into this social justice movement. And I was kind of making a lot of comparisons or equivalencies there, and there are a number of them. But today I want to just highlight some differences that there was between the historic social gospel movement and the social justice movement of today. And it makes it more of a crime. That's a strong word. But it makes it more distressing, I should say. It makes it even more distressing that churches today are involved in the social justice movement when you see and highlight these differences between what was going on 150 years ago and what's going on today. So let's start through this. So what was the agenda of the social gospel movement? Well, it was rights, but what were the rights that were being demanded in the social gospel time 150 years ago? Okay, well, there was women's rights. Really, the only demonstrations that occurred back then were the women's suffrage movements. And there was worker rights. Because for workplace safety, for hours of work, for no child labor. So these were the rights that were being demanded back then. compared to the rights that are being demanded today. Okay? And what was the inequality, the inequalities that the social gospel people said needed to be addressed back then? Remember those pictures of Hell's Kitchen that we showed you a couple of weeks ago? What were the issues back then? It was access to health care, access to education, access to housing. Okay. What are the inequalities being demanded today in the social justice movement? Exactly. Criminal justice reform. Okay. Well, that's up here. Mike says, right to use any bathroom you want. That's up here. There is the issue of wages. And that morphs, Tom, into a bigger inequality of wealth and money. This is a huge issue. Healthcare is still on the books, yes. Although I'm reluctant to put it down here because usually healthcare in today's social justice system means abortion. That's the primary health care. Yeah, reparations is this, okay? So reparations is a tool to get this. So you're right, okay? The other inequality that is very much campaigned for is power and position. You may have seen the report that the state of California recently passed a law that you have to have 2 out of every 5 members of a board of directors of public companies, where there are company directors, 2 out of 5 have to be women. So large companies that are headquartered in California have to change their board of director memberships in order to comply with this new law. That's part of this power and position inequality that the current social justice people are after, is that all of these oppressed groups of people, women, minorities, all of the array of sexual groups who are supposedly oppressed, that all of those have equal power in society. So now California is the first to actually do that, where they're stipulating to companies, you must have a certain number of this protected class of people making up your board of directors. Yes, David. Oh, my. David, why would you lead us into that swamp right now? Okay. David sees his ticket on the boards of directors in California, apparently. So, identify as a woman and you get a board of directors. There you go. You, yes. Well, it can go everywhere, Mike. I'll write it up here for your... Yes. Position and power, really, for all of these oppressed classes. as defined by secular society, which includes all of those what they call sexual minorities and women. Okay, so this is one real difference between what was the social gospel movement and what is now the social justice movement. But there is another really interesting difference from 150 years ago. 150 years ago, in the late 1800s, the uniquely American institution of voluntarily associating together to accomplish something came into full bloom in American culture and society. Let's look at some of these. The young YMCA was actually something that formed in England but came to America in the 1850s, and by the 1880s, during this social gospel thing, was in many of our cities. The National Grange, and many of you would have had relatives that have gone on who were part of the Grange, or maybe you still are, started in 1867 and by the 1880s had gone across the country. The Order of the Elks started in 1868. The Women's Christian Temperance Union started in 1873 in Ohio. The American Red Cross, which was originally formed by Clara Barton to bring relief to men wounded on the battlefield, added domestic disasters to its mission statement in 1881. The Salvation Army was brought from England in 1885. The Loyal Order of the Moose began in 1888 in Illinois. The Anti-Saloon League began in 1893 in Ohio, whose mission was to educate the public about the social ills of alcohol, close down bars and saloons in the West, and pass a constitutional amendment outlawing alcohol. The Rotary Clubs began in 1905 to bring business and professional leaders together to provide humanitarian service and advance goodwill and peace around the world. Whoops. The Lions Club began in 1920. The Order of the Owls began in 1921. What was the deal with all of this during that time frame of the social gospel? You had all the church, not all the churches, you had some churches running headlong into this social gospel thing, and then you had all these other organizations, some based loosely on Christian values, some secular, that were all about humanitarian mission and world peace, and we don't see that today in our society. What's the difference?
Bigger government.
Yeah, that's right, Mike. You hit it right on the head. Okay? Back then, remember, it's hard for us to remember this because of the way government has reached into all other spheres of life to supposedly fix problems. Back then, the government was not in all of these other spheres of life, so if there were issues to fix, people had to voluntarily come together and fix them. And that's what this was all about. Now, we can look back and say, to our thinking today, a lot of these fraternal organizations, it was just kind of weird. You know, they all had these secret initiations and secret mumbo-jumbo at all their meetings. I can remember as a young county agent, I was first posted by Penn State down in Chester County, and the Grange chapter, National Grange chapter in Honeybrook in northwestern Chester County, asked me to come up one evening and do a program for them on a certain topic. I said, sure, I'll do that. And I mean, I was still wet behind the ears, fresh off the farm. I knew nothing about the Grange or anything like that. So they said, our program starts at 7:30. So I get up there, and it was one of these old two-story buildings where you had to go up this big flight of concrete steps to get up to the main floor. So I go up these steps and I knock on the door, and some woman comes to the door and I can still see her, and she was kind of ticked off at me that I would knock on the door at 7:30. And I said, I'm Dave Swartz. I'm here to do your program. He said, the meeting started at 7:30. Oh, well, we have to have our meeting. It's secret. You can't be in here. So I cooled my heels on the front steps of that stupid Grange for 40 minutes while they did their mumbo-jumbo stuff. Then they let me in to do the program, you know. So it's, you know, today we just don't kind of get that kind of stuff. But, or I should say, why that was such a necessary part of their program. But these organizations did good things. For instance, I know nothing about the Moose, the Order of the Moose, except for the fact that my grandfather, my mom's father, and his siblings, their father left them in the early 1900s, and that would have been my great-grandmother, had no visible means of support. And the Moose took those kids and put them in an orphanage in Moose Heart, Indiana, I guess it is, that was funded by charitable donations from members of the Moose. And my grandfather and his siblings learned a trade. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened to them. So they did do great things, even though some of the way they went about it seems odd to us. But this was the key. There was no government involved. Now, today, yes?
I think another part of that is the, what I call the health industry.
Uh-huh.
Ingested the activities of a lot of these things. In other words, just think through all of the way the health industry is connected with a lot of the things on the right-hand side here. You hear the health industry talking about LGBT all the time. There's a lot of caring kind of things that happen there. I mean, there is a compassion that's built into that whole group, and yet they seem to. The health industry is so huge and powerful that it's kind of pulled that in as...
Okay, well, so Mike, you're making a good point about the healthcare industry being such a large and mammoth part of our lives now, and that's true. And so what did characterize all of these voluntary associations from the time of the social gospel movement in the late 1800s was that even though they became national organizations, their chapters were local, and the problems they worked on were local problems. Yep. Hey, Andrew, I'm not sure why I can't get this website to project when I moved out of. Do I have to close out of PowerPoint to get that to project or not? So if I, okay.
The projector's not recognizing it's plugged in.
Yeah. But why did it show the...
I think that's the default signal off the projector.
Okay. Well, this is good to know.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah. Go right ahead. You may have to talk for 15 minutes.
Well, the social justice people, one of the big tie-ins for the whole healthcare is in 1972 they came out with a book that put into code all the mental health issues and illnesses, diagnostics and statistics and whatnot, right? So a group of psychologists and psychiatrists got together on their own and decided because of insurance and all this stuff,
okay.
So homosexuality is a function in the book as a mental health issue. And then up until I think about 83, 85, and there's a huge rewriting of the book, right? It was like years before they
moved
this. Go ahead. Right? So they had to get homosexuality and some of these things
out of
the function. It's no longer.
I think you want to just mirror this.
So we
Yes, it does, and I understand that. Okay, so the other difference that I wanted to highlight, not only between the words that are used or the mission, but how the mission is accomplished back then compared to today. And I was hoping to show you this on the web. We may have to just talk about it. But compassion was shown by local people working on local problems. Now, there's no doubt that there was a government role to play here, so I'm not diminishing that. The government eventually listened to the people who wanted prohibition and put prohibition in. The government listened to the people who said we shouldn't have child labor and they outlawed child labor. The government listened to the people who said we need safer workplaces in our factories and they made the factory owners clean up their act and spend money. And so some of the union work in that regard in those days was needed and was very beneficial to people. But overall, it was mostly local people working on local problems. What is considered to be the work of social justice today? What are the three big ways that you do social justice today? You participate in social media so that everybody knows what the problem is. You demonstrate publicly. And you lobby government. Because what's one of the big things in the social justice? Oh, man, what did you do? Ah, tech people, you can't live without them. Okay. So today, you do the work of social justice. You don't have to actually go out and get your hands dirty helping someone. If you do social media work, if you demonstrate at a march in Washington, and if you lobby the government, that's social justice work. Because if one of the big things of social justice today is redistribution, who has more money and more power to quickly force redistribution than the government? So the government becomes a huge focus for social justice efforts today. All right, so here is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, one of the very largest funded foundations in the world today. And here's a web page that talks about what they do. They work in five areas. And so they have a global health division. They have a global development division. They have a global growth, which is an economic thing. In the United States, their focus is public education. And then they come to this, their fifth one, their global policy and advocacy division. Read what they have to say there. Because our resources alone are not enough to advance the causes we care about, And I'm thinking, okay, you got billions and billions, and if you don't have enough money to advance the causes, because you don't have enough money to advance the causes, we engage in advocacy efforts to promote public policies that advance our work. We build strategic alliances with governments and the public and private sector to foster greater public awareness of urgent global issues. Okay? So that gives you a clue about this, working with governments. So even the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and increasingly so, when you look at all sorts of secular philanthropic and foundation efforts, they have a policy and advocacy division. Okay, now, Andrew, how do I get to this next one? Oh, man. Okay. So there is also another foundation called One. And this foundation was founded by Bono, the singer guy. Now, I've watched as much Bono as I have women's soccer, so I know nothing about the guy except to know his name, okay? So I'm not real hip with this, but anyhow, he has always trafficked on this idea that he's this big guy for Africa and helping out the poverty people and so on. So he developed this One Foundation. Well, it just so happens that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is a major funder of Bono's One Foundation. Well, what is the purpose of the One Foundation? Okay, how we work. We build global commitment to fight poverty and disease. Okay? Look at that top line. One pursues its goals through policy, advocacy, grassroots mobilization, communications. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. Communications is social media. Grassroots mobilization is demonstrating. Policy advocacy is lobbying government. Okay? One mobilizes its 3.2 million members to pressure policymakers to increase their efforts in the fight against disease, especially in Africa. One's roots. One originated in conversations between Bill Gates and Bono in the early 2000s about the need to inform Americans about poverty around the world. Together with Melinda Gates, Bobby Shriver, George Soros, Ed Scott, and a bunch of others, they created an anti-poverty advocacy organization called DATA that focused on deploying celebrities and other influential individuals to urge world leaders to take action. Okay? This is what social justice is looking like today. For instance, this organization, some years ago, their financials showed that they had received $19 million in donations. They had spent $236,000 on direct compassion, 1%. The other 99% went to lobbying efforts for governments. Out of that $19 million, $10.5 million went to pay salaries. A spokesman for the organization defended the way the organization is run, insisting the money is used for promoting its campaign and raising awareness rather than being given straight to those who need help. The spokesman for the One Foundation said, "We don't provide programs on the ground. We're an advocacy and campaigning organization." Pardon me?
At least they're honest.
At least they're honest, yeah. So increasingly so, when you give money as an individual to Bono, thinking that you're helping some child who's suffering hunger in Africa, Bono would say, yeah, you are, but your money is actually going to help his organization pressure governments so that the governments give money to pay. Okay? Increasingly, in the social justice movement, the focus of their attention is changing public opinion and forcing government action. not providing local compassion. Okay? Really important that we understand that difference. Yes?
This is sort of like a spider web, too, because it's reaching into corporations.
Uh-huh. Yep, you're right. Okay, so real quickly. Okay, so this is the One Foundation, and you can volunteer with them. And so you can join the team. So you can put your name in there, and the Pennsylvania guy, I looked it up, is from Lebanon County, Pennsylvania. So that person supposedly will call you. But look at what skills One Foundation wants from you. Okay? Can you do community organizing? All right. I could see Randy Milligan signing up for that. I think he'd be a great community organizer. I can't even think of the crossroads where you live, Randy. I shouldn't have picked on you. All right. I live in or I love Africa. I'm a people person. I'm a faith leader in my community. I have terrific teaching talent. I'm passionate about ending poverty. I can do spreadsheets. Or I can sell water to a well. Okay? Those are the kind of people they're looking for. All right? Or I'm a college student. So it's really interesting to see how the landscape has shifted. And I wanted to make sure that because I had talked about the social gospel being the parent of the social justice movement as far as the way mainline churches have moved into social justice, that all is true. But there certainly is some distinctions between what we saw back then, not only in what they were working on, but how they worked compared to what we have today. Okay, real quickly, I want to finish up with just a couple of definitions because I don't really sense that this was very spiritual that we talked about so far today. So let me try to go back here. All right. So let's talk about what justice actually means. Here's some definitions from history. From Roman law, justice is the set and constant purpose which gives to every man his due. From Michael Sandel, which teaches a justice course from Harvard and was Harvard's first online free course that anyone could take at no cost, and millions have done so. Justice is giving people what they deserve, where what they deserve depends on their virtue and depends on sorting out hard questions of life. And then from a Christian dictionary, the definition of justice is when all of God's creatures receive what is due them and contribute out of their uniqueness to our common existence. Okay? Those are a couple of definitions of justice. Here's a couple of definitions of social justice. We all kind of know what this is, but Jonah Goldberg, who's a current political journalist, says social justice is a code for good things that no one needs to argue for and no one dare be against. I like that one. And social justice is a distribution. This is from the Oxford Dictionary, and it just blows my mind that you'd have such a squishy set of words as a definition from a dictionary. Distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society with the quality of being fair and reasonable. Okay, who gets to decide what's fair and reasonable? Okay. Well, let's look quickly in the minute or two that we have left of biblical justice. Turn to Deuteronomy 17:9. This is not going to be a surprise to you. Deuteronomy 17:9. So you shall come. This is all about the administration of justice. And Deuteronomy 17, which those of you that were in the Deuteronomy course a couple of months ago we've talked through this chapter. Much of our legal system is based on Deuteronomy, and specifically Deuteronomy 17. But in verse 9 of Deuteronomy 17, you shall come to the Levitical priest or the judge who is in office in those days, and you shall inquire of them, and they will declare to you the verdict in the case. The verdict in the case, that's the word for justice. In other words, justice means deciding a case. Deuteronomy 17:11, two verses later. According to the terms of the law which they teach you, and according to the verdict which they tell you, you shall do it. You shall not turn aside from the word which they declare to you to the right or to the left. And then verse 12, the man who acts presumptuously by not listening to the priest who stands there to serve the Lord, nor to the judge, that man shall die. So there is this idea that this justice system, all men must fall under it. All men must be open to this justice, and it affects all men equally. Deuteronomy 32, if you want to turn there. Deuteronomy 32 is the song of Moses, where he talks about the history of Israel and the goodness of the Lord. And in verse 41, Moses is repeating God's words and saying, if I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on justice, I will render vengeance on my adversaries. In other words, what Moses is telling the Israelites is, justice and final judgment resides with God. So, of course, as I said, nothing new to you. Justice is ultimately a God thing. Now turn back, just for interest, to Micah. Micah is next to Jonah in the Old Testament. The social justice folks who are believers often turn to the Old Testament prophets as justification for their views. And next week, hopefully, if we can get the technology to work, I want you to listen to some segments from sermons from folks who are preaching social gospel or social justice to see how they're using Scripture. But here's a couple of famous verses that social justice folks use. Micah chapter 3, starting in verse 9. Now hear this, heads of the house of Jacob and rulers of the house of Israel, who abhor justice and twist everything that is straight, who build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with violent injustice. Her leaders pronounce judgment for a bribe. In other words, the criminal justice system can be bribed. Her priests instruct for a price. Her prophets divine for money. Yet they lean on the Lord, saying, is not the Lord in our midst? Calamity will not come upon us. Therefore, on account of you, Zion will be plowed as a field. Jerusalem will become a heap of ruins, and the mountain of the temple will become high places of a forest. All right, so Micah is condemning all of the leadership of Israel, the priests, the political leaders, because everything is being done for a bribe and a price, and all the leadership is corrupt. Now, the social justice people, I will tell you that these social justice people wear sunglasses, and everything in the Bible is seen through the lens of social justice. So when they're wearing those sunglasses and they look at these verses, they see America. And they interpret all of this as a judgment on America. And I just can't get there, because this justice is actually talking about the justice that's going on right there compared to what's happening in Deuteronomy. And when I look at our justice system, okay, it is not perfect. It's flawed. All right, but to me, it's a lot closer to Deuteronomy than it is to this. I don't know that people are commonly receiving bribes across the nation for their leadership. Maybe some political leaders, but I don't know that as a whole they are, or that the criminal justice system is being run by the majority of it by bribes. So this is just the start on next week's lesson, where we'll look at how we need to be aware of how the social justice people interpret the scriptures, because it's a tremendous gulf from what we would do. All right, any final comments before we close? Okay, so Tom is pointing out that in the one of the other differences from the 150 years ago is back then there was a sense of nationalism and now there's a sense of globalism. Can't argue with that, Tom. Okay. Yes, Kurtz.
It struck me when you were early on, you were talking about the soccer player and just some of the quotes and stuff.
Yeah.
And, it just struck me listening to that. Like, the social justice thing becomes, it's very parasitic. And it's destroying the system. It's feeding off the system, but then destroying the system is what it gave birth to. But if we really follow biblical principles, there's a solid foundation, and from that fruit flows. And back in the 1800s, we saw more of fruit flowing from a foundation that was rooted in the right places. So it was fruit coming from that.
No question about that.
Where we're seeking to destroy the very thing that gave birth to it.
Right. I would agree with that. Are this social justice system today is more parasitic than what the social gospel movement was. Anything else? All right. Come back next week and we'll see if we can listen to a few of these great black preachers preach on social justice. So let's close in prayer.